Over the years, I have pondered the subject of divorce and remarriage. I didn't really think I would ever speak on it again. It is the most difficult subject. In my estimation, Deuteronomy 24 is one of the key passages that has been used to allow for divorce. And you might turn to that passage. As I needed to think through the whole subject recently, my interest was tweaked to restudy this crucial passage. And I thought if I could do it in one message, I would give that message now, since we've had a little break from the series. So I studied the subject once more and want to do what in some ways I've wanted to do before, is to look at just Deuteronomy 24 and seek to bring it consistently through the whole Bible. Deuteronomy 24, if you look at verse 1, it says, "When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes, because he has found some uncleanness in her." If you circle those words, "found some uncleanness," that's probably the key to the whole debate, at least in some ways. Now, the crux of the whole problem lies in the words, "because he has found some uncleanness in her." And if you study the commentaries, you will find there is little agreement as to what is meant by these words. I think it could be well summarized by the words of the Cambridge Bible for Schools and Colleges, which says, "The expression is so indefinite that it gave rise to controversy in the rabbinic schools." So the rabbinic schools are the schools of Hillel and Shammai. These are writers who wrote just before the time of Christ, or around the time of Christ. And so I want to give a proposition as to the meaning of Deuteronomy 24, both why it was given and what the meaning of the troublesome words is, that is, in my estimation. Before I give that, let me give you the general view which has led to the view that divorce is permissible. Let me boil down in brief what most think is the reason why Moses gave Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4. The idea is that divorce had become so rampant among the Israelites that Moses could not put an end to the evil practices, and so to seek to curb those practices, he gave this law. For those like Rabbi Hillel or Rabbi Shammai, who gave the two major positions on the matter of divorce that were common in Jesus' day, this concession to allow for divorce was given to all couples during any time in their lives. I think it must be clear to most that on this issue, Rabbi Hillel was not right. He allowed for divorce for almost any reason at all. If the wife burned the toast, they say he could divorce her. If God hates divorce, which I believe is the right interpretation of Malachi 2:16, it is not possible that a man could divorce his wife for such trivial things. I think it is also clear that Shammai is not right. He said one could only divorce for very serious issues such as unfaithfulness after having been married. However, Moses' law required the death penalty, not divorce, for unfaithfulness. I will argue that Moses' concession to allow for divorce was only for unfaithfulness during the time of betrothal or before marriage. And one might argue, well, the death penalty was also the requirement for unfaithfulness during the betrothal time. And that is true. I'll explain why I hold this view later. There's only one command in Deuteronomy 24. The King James Version gives as a command that a man give the divorced wife a certificate of divorce. However, the only command given in this text is that if a man marries a wife and divorces her for the reason given, if she marries another, even if the other man dies, the first man may not remarry the same woman. That's the command of the text. So I do not find any evidence in Deuteronomy 24 or from history that this command was to curb rampant divorce. I would be happy for any such information, if anyone might have it. Some think Moses' command to give a writing of divorcement would help to curb divorce. But the original wording does not give it as a command and indicates that they were already giving a certificate of divorce before the passage was given. The only instruction Moses gives is that if a man divorces his wife for the some uncleanness, he may never take her back to wife again if she marries another, even if that man dies. This instruction, it seems to me, could not affect a lot of marriages. So here's my proposition. Here it is in brief. The meaning of the difficult words of Deuteronomy 24, some uncleanness, is that a man may only divorce his wife if she had been unfaithful before marriage. I do not know of any historical evidence for the general view that divorce was rampant in Israel at this time. I believe it is an assumption reasoned from the passage alone. Excuse me. I would be happy for such information if anyone would have that. So having given the proposition that if a young man claimed that his new wife was not a virgin and that it was verified, he could divorce her instead of having her stoned to death as was required in 22:20-21, it falls to me to give evidence for the proposition. So we go to Genesis chapter 2. For the first passage, Genesis chapter 2, verses 23 through 24. And it says, "And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." I do not know where the Jews began the betrothal system of taking a wife. But the first time betrothal is mentioned in the Bible is in Exodus 21, verse 8, some 2,500 years after creation. It is nowhere instructed in the Bible, so I expect the practice was begun by the Jewish people. In Genesis 2, 23 through 24, the marriage includes physical union as indicated by the one flesh principles. There is no ground given for divorce. Once the marriage has taken place, they are one flesh. I find this as evidence that once a couple becomes one flesh, which happens at marriage, divorce is never again an option. We go now to Deuteronomy chapter 22. By the way, we'll see Jesus' use of that passage later. Deuteronomy 22. Five cases related to marriage are dealt with in this chapter. The first case relates to the complaint of a husband of a new wife that he has found her not to be a virgin. We'll go to verses 13 through 15. We have these instructions. If any man take a wife and goes into her and detests her and charges her with shameful conduct and brings a bad name on her and says, I took this woman and when I came to her I found she was not a virgin, then the father and mother of the young woman shall take and bring out the evidences of the young woman's virginity to the elders of the city at the gate. So if the charge is proven false, we have the results of that in verses 16 through 19 like this. And the young woman's father shall say to the elders, I give my daughter to this man as a wife, and he detests her. Now he has charged her with shameful conduct, saying, I found your daughter was not a virgin. And yet these are the evidences of my daughter's virginity, and they shall spread the cloth before the elders of the city. Then the elders of that city shall take that man and punish him. And they shall fine him 100 shekels of silver and give them to the father of the young woman because he has brought a bad name on the virgin of Israel. And she shall be his wife. He cannot divorce her all his days. Now it says, if the charge is false, he shall be punished to pay a fine, and then she shall be his wife, and he may not divorce her for the rest of their lives. Now, why does it say he may not divorce her all the days of his life? I propose that it is because the only reason God would ever allow for divorce is unfaithfulness before marriage. It was proved that she had not been unfaithful before marriage, therefore he could never divorce her. However, in the same case, if the charge is proved true, she was to be stoned to death. Verses 20 through 21 then say, but if the thing is true, the evidences of virginity are not found for the young woman, then they shall bring out the young woman to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her to death with stones because she has done a disgraceful thing in Israel to play the harlot in her father's house. So you shall put away the evil from among you. So if the charge was true, the young woman was to be stoned to death. If she was stoned, no divorce would ever be needed because she is dead and he is free to remarry. I believe that Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4 is a concession to the requirement that in this case, a man might divorce her instead of having her stoned. We will see that later. The concession is not for marriages that have once gone past this first day. The fifth case in Deuteronomy 22 relates to our subject and is found in verses 28 through 29. It says, if a man finds a young woman who is a virgin, who is not betrothed, and he seizes her and lies with her, and they are found out, then the man who lay with her shall give to the young woman's father 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife because he has humbled her. He shall not be permitted to divorce her all his days. In this case, it is fornication, unfaithfulness before marriage, with consent. This is not a case of rape because a different word is used when it says he seizes her than the word in verse 25, he forces her. In a case of a young couple where neither one is betrothed and they commit fornication, then the young man has to pay a fine and they shall become husband and wife and he may never divorce her. Why not? The only reason for which it would ever be allowed was if she had been unfaithful with someone other than the one she was betrothed to. In the case given here, the man could never claim she had been unfaithful to him because he was unfaithful with her. That brings us now to Deuteronomy chapter 24, 1 through 4. This passage is the crux of the whole divorce debate, at least as I see it. I believe it is this passage both Rabbi Hillel and Rabbi Shammai abused and through which divorce became a common thing in Israel. Their views arose just before the time of Christ, some 1,500 years after Moses wrote. In my view, they distorted it to refer to those who had been married for some time and the husband became unhappy because of something regarding his wife. What that something is, few can agree on. The difficulty of Deuteronomy 24:1 is this. What is meant by the words some uncleanness? In Hebrew, the words are erva debar. There is little agreement among Bible scholars regarding the meaning of these words. What then is the general view among Christians regarding the meaning of erva debar, translated some uncleanness? For the sake of time, I will skip the views of commentaries of these troublesome words who hold that divorce is allowed for some reason during the time of married life, and not specifically for unfaithfulness during betrothal. You might study the commentaries and read the various opinions. Let me just say that they are things like some defect of in the body, or some filthy, hateful thing, or some loathful distemper of body, and such like. I find these views totally unacceptable if God hates divorce. My view of the meaning of these words is that in the Jewish system of betrothal, the marriage contract or vows took place at the time of betrothal. They were considered husband and wife at the time of betrothal, but the wedding came later, often a year or so later. When a man took a wife, and on the wedding night he claimed his wife was not a virgin, this was long after betrothal, he could bring that claim to the elders. The father would have to give evidence this was not true, and they had their ways. If this claim was true, he could divorce her. This, I believe, is irva dabar, the some uncleanness. But if the husband accepted the woman, or I should say he couldn't divorce her, he could have her stoned. But if the husband accepted the woman as his wife after the first night, from that day onward, no divorce was ever allowed. I believe Moses' concession in Deuteronomy 24 does not relate to divorce after the woman has been accepted. This concession relates to that one-day window in which the husband could give his complaint. If that did not happen, he was now married for life. No divorce. So what about Deuteronomy 24? Here's what I see was happening. When a man married a wife and she had been untrue, instead of stoning her, he divorced her. Then another man married her, and he too let her go for the same reason, or if he passed away, the first husband would remarry this same woman. So Moses put this in force here. By not commanding that the woman was to be stoned, the Lord was allowing them to divorce in such a case. But this was not his original intent. Jesus said it was because of the hardness of their heart that caused them to divorce instead of having her stoned. I would expect that Moses, as in other cases, went to the Lord about this, and the Lord allowed divorce in such cases, but instructed Moses that the first man must never take the same woman back again. You can study it however you want. That is the only command of the passage. So with this concession to allow for divorce in this one case, a young man now had three choices if he discovered his wife had been unfaithful before marriage. He could remain silent about it and keep her. We will see this later. He could have her stoned, or he could divorce her. These three. Now, is there any ground to see that Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4 speaks of the same case as Deuteronomy 22, 13? Consider first the similarity of the passages. You see, in 22, 13, this had to do with unfaithfulness before marriage. In 22:13, the case clearly has to do with this unfaithfulness. Now consider the similarity of the two cases. Deuteronomy 22:13 says, if any man take a wife and go into her. 24:1 says, when a man take a wife and marries her. Both are at the very beginning of marriage. Not sometime later. Then in 22:13 it says, and hates her and gives occasion of speech against her and brings up an evil name upon her. In 24:1 it says, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some uncleanness in her. When you look at that, the similarities are very, I think, quite clear. Now 24:1 says, the man has found some uncleanness in her. The Hebrew words are irva dabar. These are the crucial words of the whole debate. I would translate these words something like, he has found something to bring a charge of indecency. In 22:13, the Hebrew word is alila dabar. I would translate that as he brings a charge of wantonness or shameful conduct. Again, there is considerable similarity. Now, 24:1 does not specify what the meaning of irva dabar is, but 22:13 clearly tells us that alila dabar is the claim that she is not a virgin. I find this as evidence that 22:13 and 24:1 speak of the same case. Now, all of this is too much to comprehend in a short time. It's all in one message. Anybody that wants to study can ponder these later. Now, in 24, 1 through 4, the command is that if one man sends her away because he brings a charge of indecency against her, and a second man marries her and sends her away for the same reason, or the second man remains married and then dies, the first man may not take her back again. Now, it appears to me that the reason the second man divorced her was for the same reason as the first man. The evidence for this is in 22:13. It says that if the man detests his wife after the wedding night, and the reason for the detesting is clearly given, and that is that she is not a virgin. In 24:3, it also says the second man, husband, detests her. Exactly the same word. However, 24:3 does not give further explanation, but 22:13 does, and it is unfaithfulness before marriage. So imagine for a moment, say some 2 million people traveling through the wilderness. That's when Moses gave this. The number of marriages that would have taken place. They got married very young. So how many marriages would have taken place in 40 years with some 2 million people? Now, it is possible that when there were so many marriages, that in some cases it was very difficult to prove if the young lady was truly a virgin or not. It may be for some such reason that the Lord allowed them to put away a young wife instead of having her stoned. We are given no information on the context of this concession. What seems to be clear is that God's desire was that he wanted to have the wife stoned if she was not a virgin, but in the case where they went ahead and divorced them, by not condemning that practice, he was permitting it. And we'll see that in the book of Matthew later. If this is correct, there was only one day in the life of a man that he could divorce his wife, and this was only in the case of a young woman who had not been married before and was found to have been unfaithful. If that day passed and the husband did not bring such a charge or could not bring such a charge, then divorce, as I see it, was never permissible, as we will see in two cases earlier. Once more, I see this as evidence that the irva dabar refers to porneia, or fornication, or unfaithfulness before marriage. We go now to Matthew chapter 1. We are now some 1,500 years after the time Moses wrote Deuteronomy 24. Joseph, a just man in Galilee, was betrothed to Mary, who became the mother of Jesus. No doubt he is excited and busy preparing a place for them to live at his father's house. He is waiting with anticipation for the day when he will go to her house and bring her to his father's house. After the wedding day, they will live here together. Matthew chapter 1, verse 18. Now the birth of Jesus Christ was as follows. After his mother Mary was betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, you see here between the betrothal and the wedding, she was found with child of the Holy Spirit. So while Joseph is busy preparing, devastating news comes. Mary, his betrothed, is with child. Verse 19. Then Joseph, her husband, being a just man, not wanting to make her a public example, was minded to put her away secretly. Joseph was a just man. It seems he would not simply accept her as his wife. So he is pondering his other two options and has decided to divorce her instead of having her stoned, which would make her a public example. It would seem from his decision to divorce her that this was a well-known practice and not objectionable to family, community, or spiritual leadership. Albert Barnes says, listen to this from Albert Barnes on the sin of fornication among other people. In Egypt, it was punished by cutting off the nose of the adulteress. In Persia, the nose and ears were cut off, and in Judea, punishment was death by stoning. So it's all viewed as tremendously serious. Verse 20. Well, while he thought about these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take to you Mary, your wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit. And she will bring forth a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. So all this was done that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet, saying, Behold, the virgin shall be with child and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which is translated God with us. Here we see evidence from the Lord himself that a young man in such a case could choose to marry the young woman or keep her if he discovered she had been unfaithful. Since the angel of the Lord recommended this, and that shows God's approval as well. So with the angel recommending that he take Mary as his wife, he chooses this option. Verse 24, Then Joseph, being aroused from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord commanded him, and took to him his wife, and did not know her until she brought forth her firstborn son, and he called his name Jesus. Now, Joseph is an amazing man. But if God did not allow for divorce in such cases, would he himself not have violated his own law? But notice it is the angel that says he should not be afraid to take Mary as his wife. So clearly accepting such a woman as his wife, in spite of the fact that she is expecting, was acceptable to the Jews and much more so to God himself. Again, this is evidence for the view of the Urva Dabar of Deuteronomy 24, as I have suggested. That brings us to Matthew chapter 5. In this chapter, Jesus has been pointing out the spirit, not the letter of the law. Paul teaches that the law is spiritual. The Jews made many errors because they failed to see the spirit of the law. So you will read here numerous times that Jesus says, You have heard, but I say to you. He is correcting their views. He corrects the error of their Jewish learning. And in 5:31 through 32, he points out their error in the matter of divorce. So we'll read verses 31 through 32. Furthermore, it has been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except, and here you have a physical immorality or sexual immorality or porneia, and I view the word porneia as immorality before marriage. So any reason other than this causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. Jesus is saying that the Jewish practice of verse 31 is wrong. They said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. Well, what was wrong with that? Is that not what Deuteronomy 24 said? Here's my conclusion. They were wrong in saying this was a command. It was not. And they were wrong in giving the right, not giving the right qualification to allowance for divorce. So Jesus now explains the difficult words Urva Dabar, as I see it. He explains the reason the man detests the woman. It is the case of porneia in the Greek New Testament. Now, if the word porneia, which almost all say means physical immorality of any kind, is a broad term, then there is nothing wrong with what the Jews were doing, at least those who followed Rabbi Shammai. But Jesus indicates the Jews were wrong, so he says that divorce is only allowed in the case of porneia. That is unfaithfulness before marriage. Here, I believe, is Jesus' interpretation of Urva Dabar. Also, as I see it, Jesus is saying that the reason the man of Deuteronomy 24 detested his new wife is the claim that she is not a virgin. Now, it is interesting to me that the word but of verse 32 is the original word de. The conjunction and indicates a continuation of the same. The conjunction but indicates a contrast, but we do not have a contrast here. We have a slight contrast. It's the word de. We don't have an English word for it. Jesus is not saying the Jews say, but I say this. He is saying the Jews say this, though that really is not quite right. They need to understand that the Urva Dabar refers to porneia, unfaithfulness before marriage, not after. Again, I see Jesus' teaching in this passage as evidence for the view proposed in Deuteronomy 24. That brings us now to a most crucial passage, Matthew chapter 19. And again, I believe it gives more evidence for the view I have suggested. Matthew 19, Now it came to pass when Jesus had finished these sayings that he departed from Galilee and came to the region of Judea beyond the Jordan, and great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. The Pharisees also came to him, testing him and saying to him, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason?" The Jewish leaders were getting more and more hostile with Jesus and tried to trap or test him. And now they will test him regarding divorce. And it may be that here they are testing to see if he agrees with Rabbi Hillel, who allowed for divorce for very trivial reasons, or if he agrees with Rabbi Shammai. When they questioned if it is lawful to divorce for just any reason, that is a reference to the school of thought of the Rabbi Hillel. Jesus then gives his answer in verses 4 through 5 like this. And he answered and said to them, "Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh'?" Let me give Jesus' words in my own words. They have said, "Can a person divorce for just any reason?" And he's saying something like this: "Why would you Pharisees ask me such a simple question? I mean, have you never read Genesis chapter 2? This is most amazing. Your question is answered right there in Genesis 2. Jesus then explains what Genesis 2, 23 through 24 means in verse 6. "If God makes two one flesh, the conclusion is you are commanded not to divorce at all." Verse 6. "So then, they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate." Now, from Jesus' perspective, the question is answered completely in Genesis chapter 2. It needs no addition. But if what he has said is true, then neither Rabbi Hillel nor Shammai are right, and the Pharisees are wrong too. But all three groups did not get their view from Genesis 2. They got it wrongly from Deuteronomy 24. This is where all errors are made. Verse 7. They said to him, "Why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away?" Here we see where they made their errors. First they said, "Why did Moses then command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away?" We have seen already that Moses did not command such a thing. By the way, let me just say that allowing divorce in such cases was not actually a Mosaic exception. I believe Moses expressed what God allowed. Moses only wrote it down. So look at how Jesus points out their error in verse 8. He said to them, "Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so." I have wondered, could it be that the Lord permitted divorce in such cases because the Jews had come to use the betrothal system of marriage? They didn't just have their marriage like we do. In this system, the covenant took place sometime before the actual marriage. This betrothal bound them together as husband and wife, but the marriage had not yet taken place. The betrothal system then allowed time for sin to take place between the betrothal and the wedding day. Could it be that the Lord allowed for divorce if unfaithfulness took place before the wedding day because physical union had not yet taken place? However that was, only if the woman was unfaithful during this time a divorce was permitted, and it was a concession to having her stoned to death. After Moses allowed divorce in such cases, it became a practice in Israel, as Joseph in Matthew 1 indicates. But Jesus will now explain further in verse 9. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for porneia, unfaithfulness before marriage, and marries another, commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. If I am correct that the Lord through Moses allowed divorce for unfaithfulness before marriage, and this unfaithfulness is the Irva Dabar of Deuteronomy 24, we could read verse 9 like this. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for porneia, Irva Dabar, or unfaithfulness before marriage, and marries another, commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. If the interpretation is correct, he is then saying, not only did Moses say it, I say it as well. If this is correct, the evidence is really overwhelming. So we ask, is there evidence that this interpretation is correct? First, this ends Jesus' discussion with the Pharisees. It seems that the Pharisees leave disappointed, knowing that Jesus agrees with neither Rabbi Hillel or Shammai, and so he doesn't agree with them either. Second, if you study the harmonizing passages, verse 10 takes place later in some house. Jesus' answer to the Pharisees has caused grave concern for his own disciples. They say this in verse 10. His disciples said to him, if such is the case of the man with his wife, it is better not to marry. What did Jesus' disciples understand him to say? They understood him to say, if anyone gets divorced for any reason other than unfaithfulness before marriage, porneia, then they are living in a continual state of adultery. That's what they're understanding. It seems to me that they are so used to the common views of the day that even they find Jesus' answer shocking. They are astonished. It brings them to one conclusion. If the case of a man with his wife is like that, you better not marry. There is no ground for divorce. You can't get out. But I believe the opposite is true. If the case of a man is such with his wife, only now is it safe to get married. Do you follow? At least for the wife. If Hillel was right, she burned the toast, she's done. That's not a safe marriage. Even if Jesus had only given marital unfaithfulness or any serious issue as ground for divorce, he would have been in agreement with Shammai, and the Pharisees or the disciples would not have been shocked. They would not have been surprised. Verse 11. But he said to them, all cannot accept this saying, but only those to whom it has been given. Not all can receive this saying, that is, it is better not to marry. Almost all should get married. That is how God set it out to be, and is also what all honest people know. But if some can receive this saying, who are they? Look at verse 12. For there are eunuchs who were born thus from their mother's womb, and there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He who is able to receive it, let him receive it. Let me just say to that, what Jesus means is that this saying, it is better not to marry, is only for some people. And he says some are born like that, some have had this done to themselves for the kingdom of heaven's sake. Jesus then says, whoever can receive that saying, let him receive it. In other words, most of you should get married. There is an option when a man cannot have a wife, and we won't discuss it here. But to conclude on this passage, once more, I take this passage as more evidence for the view of Irva Dabar I have taken in Deuteronomy 24. Mark chapter 10. This is a parallel account to Matthew chapter 19 with one notable exception. For the sake of time, we'll leave out verses 1 through 9. The wording is basically the same as Matthew 19, 1 through 6, We'll start then in verse 10 and notice how plain it makes divorce and remarriage in verses 11 through 12. So he said to them, "Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her, and if a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery." You will not get a more clear and concise answer to the question on divorce than this. Let me remind you that it says nothing about whether this takes place by a believer or an unbeliever. However, there is a major difference between this account and Matthew's account, and it is that Mark leaves out the exception clause. That raises this pressing question. Why does Mark leave out the exception clause? Or for that matter, we might ask, why does Matthew include it? I think it is generally agreed that Matthew includes it because he is writing to the Jews who use the betrothal system of marriage. It seems evident that Mark leaves it out because he is writing to Gentiles and they do not have the betrothal system. Our engagement is nothing like the betrothal. We do not make our vows at the engagement. We make them at the wedding. So Mark leaves this out because he's writing to Gentiles and they don't have this system. Once they marry, the whole process is complete. For Gentiles, the covenant is made on the wedding day, not a year or more later, or before. Again, I find this as evidence for the view I have expressed of the Urva Dabar. Then Luke 16:18 for the last passage. Now, I know it's a lot of material, but anyone who wants to study it can study it from the basics I give here. Luke chapter 16, verse 18. Luke's gospel shortens the whole passage of Matthew 19, 1 through 9, and Mark 10, 1 through 12, to one verse, and it is this: "Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced from her husband commits adultery." Once again, it is very clear and concise, but once more, it leaves out the exception clause. And once again, it is viewed that he had a Gentile audience in mind. And once again, I find this as evidence for the proposition I have given. How then is it with divorce and remarriage among Gentiles? How is it? No divorce. To conclude, if anyone can give me some historical evidence for the common view that Deuteronomy 24 is given because divorce and remarriage was a big problem during the Exodus, I would be happy to receive that. I do not find historical evidence for that. However, I have given a number of evidences for the view that the Mosaic concession, which is really a divine concession, refers to unfaithfulness before marriage. It is the, as I see it, the Urva Dabar. It is porneia. I do not have time to deal with it here, but I see porneia as a narrow term, not a broad term. To anyone who questions this, you might study 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 10, and Galatians 5, 19 through 21. This message does not deal with all problems related to divorce and remarriage. It only deals with the issue related to in Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4. But I see this as the most crucial passage, and the two words we talked about as the most crucial two words related to the whole subject of divorce and remarriage. So I trust that the Lord will use this for those who may take exception with this, that they might study further and seek whether this might not in actual fact be the case.